This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage for the five-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Live from Radio Row in Atlanta, this is the Patriots All 22 podcast brought to you by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. And we're doing a little bit of a home and home here. I have my colleague Mike Petraglia. Trags is here with us. Adam Kirchen is also here back in Boston. But first of all, Trags, thanks for coming on.
It's great to return the favor, and I'm looking forward to this game finally getting underway, and I think there's a lot to break down in terms of X's and O's, and that's the whole point of your podcast,
yeah,
isn't it?
We're the All 22. We do the X's and O's. We get in the weeds. Adam and I talk for about 2 hours a week, usually, when it's just the two of us, about random football things and draft stuff, and I got something cool to tell you afterwards, Adam, about something that I just did with Buffalo quarterback Tyree Jackson, NFL draft hopeful, will be at the combine, and he was here on Radio Row, and I got to interview him, which was really cool.
Oh, that's great.
And be out on the lookout for that on YouTube, on CLNS Media's YouTube page, and on Twitter we'll post it on there as well. But before we get to the draft, and Adam and I will be doing that soon here after the Patriots play in a little thing called the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
and I think the first thing, the first thing that we want to start with here is Sean McVay, because personally, I think me and Adam are both in a little bit of a contrarian take here, that the next Bill Walsh, aka Sean McVay, might be a little bit overhyped by some of the people in the NFL media and just in the NFL cognoscenti. So, Trags, we wanted to just get your take on this.
I think Sean McVay, as Brian Billick, I thought, did a great job breaking down earlier in the week, does some things that are very, very unique and very much his own way of approaching things in terms of play calling and the responsibility your quarterback can off, right? And that is the ability to call plays and protections at the line of scrimmage. And the reason he does this is because to try and, for the most part, trip up defenses that are going to take away certain looks at the line of scrimmage. And Sean McVay believes that if you can give Jared Goff the ability to call his protections and call some of his plays at the line of scrimmage, that takes away some of the predictability for the defense. Now, the flip side of that, of course, is what Brian Billick pointed out, and I think we all know Bill Belichick and obviously Brian Flores are going to try and take away some of the pre-snap looks. And I think this chess match is going to come down to how well does Jared Goff handle the lack of information pre-snap that the Patriots are going to give him.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that me and Adam are kind of on the same page in this one. It's just that when you look at the McVay offense on tape and you look at what they do schematically, it's pretty simple. You know, it's the same personnel grouping. It's a lot of that tight formation, misdirection, play action stuff that really isn't necessarily new or revolutionary to the league. It's a lot of the same stuff that Mike Shanahan and Kyle Shanahan run, and it's from that same kind of coaching tree that it all stems from that. And it's not that he's not a personality-wise an interesting coach and a great coach and a unique coach with his youth and with his energy and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure that he does a lot of other things schematically that we're not seeing. But I think the main thing is, Adam, that we kind of are in agreement on is just that some of the things that he's doing, he's getting kind of credited for reinventing the wheel, and I'm not sure he's really reinventing the wheel.
Right. And I just think it's kind of funny. I think he's a good coach. I think he deserves a lot of credit for what he's been able to do with this team. I just don't think every team in the league should be looking for the next Sean McVay. You know, and it seems like over this past hiring season, teams have just wanted a young offensive mind, and that's sort of what they think McVay is in totality. Whereas I feel like, you know, just look for the next good coach. And teams sort of limited themselves by, you know, guys that McVay has been, you know, friends with or has coached with and all this stuff. I think he's a very good coach, but let's slow down on turning the entire league into, you know, 32 Sean McVays. I think in that respect, and I also think, just like Evan said, I mean, it's not like his offense is, you know, is reinventing the wheel or anything like that. It's a good offense. But I think if you take McVay's play calling abilities out of it, it's nothing really all that special. I think it really is. It is dependent on his abilities alone, sort of.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of us interviewed Sean McVay, or asked Sean McVay questions the other day, and it feels like we're going to get head coaching interviews just from being associated with the guy. And that's like kind of the way that, you know, it's going here in the league. But regardless of if he's, you know, the next big thing or a Hall of Fame track or anything like that, this game is going to be played on Sunday, and he's going to obviously be a huge part of it. And Travis, what do you think, you know, the Patriots should be more afraid of, the passing game for the Rams offense or the running game?
I don't think it's that simple. I think, first of all, if Todd Gurley is healthy, and if C.J. Anderson is a significant part of the game plan, you have to be concerned about the Rams' ability with a very, I think, underplayed, in terms of the way it's been spoken about here this Super Bowl week, offensive line. Their offensive line is very, very good. And if they can do to the Patriots what the Titans were able to do and what the Jaguars were able to do, and certainly what the Steelers were able to do in Pittsburgh, and that is dominate and open up big holes along the defensive front, that's going to really put Jared Goff at ease. And I think if I'm Sean McVay coming into this game, that's my number one priority on offense. How do I put Jared Goff, who clearly his eyes are going to be, you know, larger than life going into the game, whether or not he's the next Tom Brady, or, you know, he's in a similar position that Tom Brady was, you know, when he came into the league and played in the Super Bowl, is not the point. The point is you want to put your young quarterback at ease, and a running game will open up play action. To me, that is the number one concern. But close behind that, and this hasn't been talked about at all that I've heard, are the bunch formations, and the Patriots in the past, in the last couple of years, have had issues communicating their coverage off bunch formations. Yeah. And I think you're going to see a lot of that on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you hit nail on the head there with the offensive line, first and foremost. Everybody wants to talk about Todd Gurley and the receivers and Jared Goff and Sean McVay's play calling. But when that offensive line gets rolling, it is maybe the best unit in the league in both run blocking and pass protection. And one of the things that they do, obviously, is they run that outside zone stuff.
Right.
Try to get the play on the perimeter, but the running backs, especially Gurley, does a great job, and Anderson too, of kind of just probing the line for holes. And you don't necessarily know exactly, is this going to hit B gap, A gap? Which way is this going? Because you can kind of slow play it, and it kind of develops slowly, and then they just pick the right hole, and that's where you can see that acceleration, especially from Gurley, hit the open field. So it's tough because it's not like a gap scheme or a man blocking scheme where you know that it has a point of attack. It kind of can be multiple blocks, you know, kind of read your blocks and which way it sets up, and it could be multiple holes that could be the option for the running back. That kind of formula, the Steelers, the Lions, Jaguars, the five losses really for the Patriots all came in games where the Patriots just couldn't stop the run out of when the offense was in three wide receiver sets. They spread them out with the receivers, and then they run it right down their throats. The Dolphins game, obviously, too, falls right in that category. That's what they all have in common, is not being able to stop the run and getting gashed out of 11 personnel.
The other thing I would point out, Evan and Adam, is the fact that the Patriots have been susceptible to cutbacks.
Yep.
And watching on film, and this is where Todd Gurley's health does come up as a factor.
Yeah.
If Todd Gurley is able to cut back strong on his knees, and his knees are healthy enough to allow him to cut back, that's where you could see 10, 15, 18-yard runs through the zone blocking and the Patriots getting gashed. And that's what I'm sure Brendan Daly is coaching his team up for in terms of responsibilities this week. You cannot over pursue this week against running backs who are going to want a zone block and open up some cutback holes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that really the running game if you let that get going, and then it opens up so much more for that offense in terms of their play action. Goff is so much more dangerous when the running game is working. And if you want to talk about age and stuff like that, talk about Andrew Whitworth. I mean, how long has that guy been, you know, in the league, and what a difference he makes for that offensive line. And it is a sort of a versatile offensive line. They're athletic. They can push you around and they can protect. And I kind of feel like, Goff can really do a lot more if Anderson and Gurley, just sort of get into a rhythm like they've been able to do in some of these games. Anderson's really been sort of a terrific back lately with some of these runs. And, if you're the Rams, you probably want, a healthy Gurley to be the guy. But I mean, they can get it done if Anderson's the one who's making these runs. He's not like a home run threat like Gurley, but he can really just churn out 5-7 yard gains over and over again. And that's something the Patriots really have to guard against. And I would think that the Patriots are sort of looking to stop the run first here and make Goff a little bit more one dimensional.
Yeah, I mean, stopping the run, and then what it does is it also allows them to stop play action a little bit easier because they're not really getting gashed on the ground. And that's kind of the whole Rams offense right there, is running the football and then misdirection and play action in the passing game to open some of those wider throwing lanes for Goff downfield. And Anderson, I had Jalen Smith, the Cowboys linebacker, on ESPN or NFL Network, I can't remember which one, this morning, and he just talked about how Anderson's just kind of like a bowling ball, and he's just really tough to tackle, not because he's necessarily the most elusive guy, but just because of how hard he runs, and he's just a rock, and you try to hit him, and you just bounce right off of him. And we've seen that, obviously, in Anderson's Denver days, kind of that style has kind of hurt the Patriots. All right, in the secondary, we talked a little bit about this on your podcast, Trags, but in the secondary, I still kind of think that this is a very interesting chess match, and one that they're going to have to do a good job of kind of picking who gets who properly here, because remember last year in the Super Bowl, obviously Malcolm Butler put a whole wrench into this whole thing, but they put Eric Rowe on Alshon Jeffery in the first quarter, and that did not go so well for the Patriots, and it kind of put that game in the Eagles' tempo from the very beginning. Yes. So deciding who has who in the secondary is very important. What do you think the Patriots do?
Well, I think Stephon Gilmore is probably, like you said in my podcast, going to draw Robert Woods.
Yeah. The Patriots actually tweeted out a photo this morning, which some intern or somebody's going to get scolded for by Belichick, I'm sure, that had Gilmore covering a guy in a 17 penny in the practice during the week. Whoops, which obviously the 17 penny is the scout team Robert Woods.
So, and the reason we say that is because, in my podcast, you made a great point of pointing out, and I asked J.C. Jackson about this, at media availability, you have to play a guy like Brandon Cooks fearlessly. And J.C. Jackson has the speed to keep up with Brandon Cooks, right? Yeah. And I think they have seen enough of J.C. Jackson to know that he will go up and compete for balls to either, pick them off or knock them off. And more importantly, his tracking skills, like you said. And we saw that in preseason.
Yeah.
Bill was talking about Jackson's ability to turn around, make the play on it, and always, always know where the ball is.
Yep.
As a rookie, as an undrafted rookie, he knew that. So I think in this type of game, I think J.C. Jackson has earned the trust enough to go out and play Brandon Cooks. What I have no idea, and I'll be first one to acknowledge this, I have no idea if they're going to offer help over the top on either J.C. Jackson or Stephon Gilmore. I don't think Gilmore at this point, I don't think he needs it.
Right.
So I don't know how much help they would give J.C. Jackson if indeed he is covering Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that the Belichick motto is always to at least necessarily dedicated double to one player, but always shade a safety towards one player that they're a little bit more afraid of, who they think is the true number one guy, whether it's Brandon Cooks or Tyreek Hill last week or whoever the case may be. And really, they just allow Gilmore all season long. They've trusted him to just take somebody one-on-one without that safety help so they can move that safety to someplace else. The other thing I like about Jackson on Cooks is that you know that Jackson's going to get up in his face and play aggressive at the line of scrimmage. And if you can redirect Cooks and jam him at the line of scrimmage a little bit, that can tend to get, you know, in his way as well. So maybe that is the direction that they go. And obviously, I think Gilmore gets Robert Woods alone, and they take that and leave that, you know, whatever they give up there, they give up there.
Kind of like with Sammy Watkins.
Right. With Sammy Watkins, exactly. But like you said about the tight formations, I think the interesting thing about this matchup is that if you play a lot of man coverage against those tight formations, what McVay is going to do is he's just going to run crossers across the field all day long, and he's going to try to get those rubs and those picks, those natural picks, to kind of disrupt that man coverage. And that's something that I think, you know, could be problematic to playing that type of coverage. The Lions in that game, you know, that I keep on coming back to, is kind of a blueprint, because Patricia's running the same defense more or less that Belichick is running. So the fact that it was successful against this Rams offense in a lot of ways is kind of things that you can take from it. And Devin McCourty even said, yeah, we watched the Lions game to learn a little bit of how Patricia used our defense to kind of go and combat the Rams offense. And the Lions played a lot of quarters coverage and match coverage on the perimeter and a lot of quarters coverage against this team to kind of mitigate the fact that they're going to run a lot of misdirection. They're going to run a lot of horizontal routes and the pick stuff to get away from that.
So if you run a lot of quarters coverage, you know what that opens up, though?
The middle of the field.
Middle of the field and the run game.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
can be problematic.
Yeah, I mean, and that Lions team got gashed a little bit in the run.
So if you're Sean McVay and you're talking to Jared Goff in a quarterback meeting.
Yep.
Night before the Super Bowl. And you see, you tell Goff, if you see quarters coverage, if you come to the line of scrimmage and they have seven defensive backs out there.
Yeah.
You're going to audible to a run.
Right, right.
And there's no question about that, right?
Right. And the one thing that the Lions were able to do was they were able to play some split safety pre-snap, where they put the two safeties up like they were going to play quarters or they're going to play cover two, and then they actually rotated it into a post-safety cover three coverage, and that gave Goff some trouble because one, he wasn't able to really diagnose it as quickly as he needed to after the snap. I keep going back and forth. You know, man is obviously the defense that the Patriots are better at. It's what their bread and butter is, but against this offense with the condensed formations, it's scares me a little bit.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like if they match up man to man, I'd want Gilmore on Woods. I'd want Jackson on Cooks. This would sort of feed into the Rams' hands a little bit, knowing what they do and sort of how their offense works. If you know, with those condensed formations and then you know running those crossing routes, I don't know how well man coverage would work. Well, I think I do know how well it wouldn't work. You know, I mean,
yeah.
We've seen it time and time again, and it's really not just a Patriots thing. Even though we've talked about it all year, it's really a league wide thing. You know, it's something that defensive coordinators have struggled with. You know, lately is just the amount of crossing routes you see in the league now, and how effective it is, and so I think, you know, the Patriots have to be multiple. You know, they have to not only, you know, show multiple looks to the Rams to just sort of confuse Goff pre-snap, but they also have to be multiple post-snap and sort of, you know, throw multiple looks at them and, you know, and not be afraid to, you know, try some zone coverage and passing guys off and just sort of sitting back. But I do, you know, I do sort of think that that they are better in man coverage, and they just sort of have to see if the Rams will go that way. So I think the Patriots would be smart to just come out in man coverage and see what the Rams do. But again, it'll be a chess match. It's going to be back and forth. I think that the Rams do have the personnel to sort of hurt the Patriots that way, but but it's just going to come down to sort of how they adjust.
So yeah. here's what I'm thinking, and I'm thinking out loud, and it's extemporaneous.
This is what the podcast forum is for.
So if I'm Sean McVay, and I'm talking to Jared Goff, yeah. and I'm trying to calm my quarterback down going into the Super Bowl, is it dangerous to oversimplify and say, I want you to count who's in the box, and if they're a linebacker, if there's – base everything off how many defensive backs are on the field.
Right.
And if they are in five defensive back, if they're in nickel, you do this. If they're in dime, you do this. And if they're in quarters, you do this. And just keep it that simple. And that way you can tell Jared Goff, I don't care. I don't give a rat's ass what they're doing at the line of scrimmage to try and confuse you. For the most part, ignore that and call like base protections.
Yeah.
Because I think what the Patriots are trying to do is they're trying to get inside Goff's head and screw with him about what kind of protection do I call? Do I slide three to one side and do I slide four to another? And I think if I'm Sean McVay, I don't want Jared Goff thinking that way. I want him thinking, okay, read what the field is.
Yeah.
Don't read what the line is per se.
Yeah.
And call your plays off of that and keep it so, and we will be responsible for the rest, meaning our offensive line.
John Sullivan is a very intelligent center. He's not necessarily the best in terms of, actually play, but
you see where I'm
going
here.
In terms of his execution in his mind. Yeah. I think that the biggest thing is the Patriots, and this is kind of why I wonder if they play a little bit more zone in this game, because the Rams are going to look at that Chiefs tape and say, okay, they played man 90% of the time in that game. They played zone a little bit in the second half, but it was mostly man coverage. So wouldn't it be total Belichick move to then just completely shift his strategy and just say, okay, Sean McVay, Jared Goff especially, you've been watching us on tape against the Chiefs and against the Chargers, play all this man coverage. Now all of a sudden we're going to throw some new zone looks at you and see how you react to it.
But you just by your own admission said, what do the Patriots defensively do best?
Right.
They play man.
Right.
I don't know. I don't think Bill overthinks it there. I think if he knows that they play man best and man would work against the personnel, the Rams personnel, he sticks with man. I don't think he overthinks it like that. But I don't know.
I think the biggest thing is that they need to – the decision that they need to come to is either, one, they're going to get called for a couple of penalties, holding penalties, illegal contacts, because they're going to have to beat up – if they play man coverage, they're going to have to beat up the receivers at the line of scrimmage, because otherwise you're going to get those intertwining routes and you're going to
– like Rams 0-1.
Right, and people are going to run into each other and it's going to be a mess. So the way to combat that is to get in everybody's face across the line of scrimmage and jam them at the line, but they're going to have to give up the fact that they might get some holdings, they might get some illegal contacts, they might even get some pass interferences, but if they get three or four of those throughout the course of the game, they might say that we're going to live with that over the, to take the other 60
plays.
Because we're going
to put points up. And
right. The other 60 plays will outweigh the four penalties that we get called
for. We're not worried about losing this game 21-17.
Right. So I think this is really – this is one that I've been going back and forth, but let's go to the other side of the ball now. Let's talk about the Patriots offense, which obviously in that Chiefs game and in the Chargers game has really been executing as well as they have all year. But I think that the big question is what's Wade Phillips going to do against the Patriots offense? Because Wade Phillips has had the blueprint in the past. It's all kind of come down to how the players have executed for him on the field and not necessarily his game plans. So I think that he knows what to do against Tom Brady. It's just a matter of if he can get that out of his players and how the Patriots then adjust to it.
Yeah.
What I'm looking forward to. Go ahead, Adam. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think when I look at what Phillips wants to do, I think he's going to do everything he can. And we talked about this a little bit last week, Evan. I think he's going to do everything he can do to keep things from the middle of the field. He's going to try to work things towards the edges. So he's going to try to, like you said last week, maybe some robber coverage and stuff like that. Try and keep things away from the middle of the field. And when you watch the Saints game against the Rams, the Saints had a lot of success throwing the ball to Alvin Kamara. And I wonder how much you know, the Patriots look at that game and say, okay, well, we can get James White going here. I'm not saying they're the same player or anything, but, you know, they play the same position. It's a bread and butter type of play for the Patriots for, you know, dumping the ball down to James White. I wonder how much that's going to be a part of it. You know, it just looks like it could go that way, at least at the beginning. It's something I think at least that the Patriots should at least go to it first.
Yeah, I can tell you right now, if the Rams come out and their plan is just we're going to put Mark Barron on James White in man coverage, then James White is going to have a big day, because that's exactly what they tried to do with Alvin Kamara. They put Corey Littleton, their other linebacker, and Mark Barron, who are both kind of built like safeties that play linebacker, on Kamara, and they just couldn't touch him. And not that Kamara really had a lot of big catches in that game, but he had a lot of drive-sustaining ones. You know, had three first downs. He was keeping them in third and manageables, and that obviously hinders what Aaron Donald and Sue and the rest of those guys can do. But I think that all of us Jags are expecting the Rams to load the box and try to take away the middle of the field.
I don't think there's any question about that. And, you know, I keep coming back to the 2015 AFC Championship in, you know, January of 16. And obviously the Rams don't have this secondary that the Broncos did back then, but they do have a great defensive front.
Yep.
And I think they'll be able to sustain pressure on Tom Brady on their own without blitzing. So that will allow them, in theory, to drop, to cover the middle of the field, to take away the slants, to take away the crossers from Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan, Dorsett, and, you know, even Gronk for that matter.
Right.
Excuse me. And I think you're going to see a lot of that from Wade Phillips early on. But what I'm very curious to see, first 3 months of the season, right? This is a big storyline about the Patriots. They couldn't score in their first drive of the game.
Yeah.
What have they done in the two
Just
playoff games?
Two were better than you up front, man on man, 8 minute, 14 play,
to
touchdown
open each
drive.
Playoff game,
yeah,
and
set the tone
both
completely.
At home and on the road, that absolutely set the tempo.
Yeah.
Well, at least in the Charger game for the whole game, but for the Chiefs game, the first half.
Right.
And will the Patriots be able to do that in this game? I don't know. I think it's going to be tougher to do that against this Rams defense. I mean, the Charger defense was built up like nothing I'd have ever heard going into that first playoff game, the divisional round, and they spit the bit, and the Patriots took advantage. I don't know if the Patriots will be able to do that on their first drive, and if they don't, how do they respond? Does that affect what they want to do offensively?
Right. The issue with running the ball early in the game, like the Patriots have done, is when it doesn't work, you're going three and out awfully quickly, you know, to start the game, and you're giving the ball back right away. But I think the biggest thing is that the Chargers' defense was just small. They were small. Other than Brandon Meebane and Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram, the rest of the defense, they were playing six or seven defensive backs, and they were just a small D. Now, this Rams defense is small in the back end, too, and Barron and Littleton are their only two linebackers, and they're more like 230, 235. They're very athletic guys, but they're not big guys. But the issue is that you have Donald, you have Sue, and you have Michael Brockers, who are just three rocks in the front of that defensive line. And they play that 3-4 under front where they put the bubble on the strong side, and they make sure that you can't run to the play side as often as you would like. And then they put Donald on the back side of the run, and he's just shooting gaps and getting upfield and making tackles for a loss. So I think what's cool about it is, you know, you go back and watch some of the, you know, chess matches between Josh McDaniels and Wade Phillips in the past, and McDaniels and Scarnecchia know the type of front that Wade likes to run, and they make little tweaks and adjustments to their scheme to make sure to account for Derek Wolfe when it was in Houston, or it was J.J. Watt, now it's Aaron Donald. So they make sure that they're blocking guys head-on instead of reaching guys, because when you try to block Aaron Donald with the guy next to him instead of the guy that's over him, it's over, because he's so quick into the gap.
Well, you get an automatic hold.
Right. It's just he gets upfield too quickly to make that block happen.
Evan, I just want to jump in here. We hear so much about Aaron Donald, the pass rusher.
Yeah.
Aaron Donald, the run stopper.
Yeah, well, the thing about it is that what they've done most of the year is they've tried to let Sue and Donald just kind of get upfield and make plays behind the line of scrimmage. And part of the reason why they've given up so many yards per carry in the regular season is because that's a very boom or bust strategy. It either works or it doesn't. And then when they have nobody behind them to make tackles, you give up 5 yards per carry. So in the playoffs, what's really happened is two things. One, Sue is hit another level. He was not playing at this level in the regular season, and he's really elevated his game in the postseason. And the other thing that has happened is that Michael Brockers is the only guy really on this defensive line that wins with just holding his ground and fundamentals. He's not Donald. He's not coming and firing off the ball. He's the strong side defensive end that's holding the point of attack for them, and he's played really well in the playoffs. So moving those two guys is almost as important as not letting Donald blow up the entire play right at the snap. And I think that Brockers and Dante Fowler, we're going to get to this in a second, are two just very underrated players in this whole matchup, because we're talking so much about Donald and Sue and the big names. But Adam, I guess, do you think the Patriots are going to be able to run the ball the way that they have against this Rams front?
Well, I think it depends on how much they commit to it. I think if they do commit to it, I think they will. I think the running game right now is operating at a pretty high level. That said, I do think from everything that's coming out of there, from what the Rams players are saying, they seem like they're pretty focused on stopping the run.
Yeah, they flat out said, we know they're going to try to run the football. We're going to do whatever we can to not let them run it.
Yeah, so, I mean, in that respect, maybe, maybe it doesn't come out just that way. So, but I do think the Patriots are still going to, commit to it, and I still think they're going to go for it. But, I mean, I think if the Rams – I just feel like this Rams defensive line – these front guys are so good that you're not just gonna, you're not just gonna trample your way to 200 yards rushing against these guys. This is a formidable front. So it's, I think the Patriots are sort of gonna move the ball, in a different way than that. I think they're going to still have those formations where they have Devlin in there and try to power it on them and stuff like that. And then they're going to have their zone blocking as well. But I don't think it's just going to, be easy pickings in the running game at all.
Yeah, before we move on to this last point, I'm very interested to see how much of the analytics the Patriots coaches actually care about, because the numbers would suggest, I wrote about this in my game plan, that the Rams actually defend the run poorly out of 11 personnel when the offense is in 3 wide receiver sets, but they defend the pass poorly when there's a fullback on the field. So it's kind of like the inverse rule, right? So they give up when the offense is in 12 personnel, which is a 2-back set with Devlin and Sony, or Devlin and White, or Devlin and Burkhead, they give up over 13 yards per attempt. And it hasn't gotten any better with Aqib Talib back. It's around the same number. So they're very poor at defending the pass out of 12. But when the offense is in 12, they are around 2.5 yards per carry on the ground, because the Rams are good at defending the run out of 12. But then when they put 11 on the field, it's over 6 yards a carry. So if the Patriots run the ball out of 11 personnel in this game, I guess is what I'm saying, is that Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick are telling you that we actually look at the numbers and we actually care a lot about the analytics. That was something that the Saints didn't do. The Saints did what they do, which is they put multiple tight ends on the field, and they had a fullback on the field for a lot of the game, and they tried to run the football on them, and they weren't able to move the ball.
Well, the Patriots are also a game plan offense. Yeah. Like, they're a game plan team. Offensively and defensively. Yep. And we've heard that all the time, right? Yep. I mean, Belichick admits that, hey, what we coach a player to do 1 week is not going to be the same as what we coach them to do the next week.
And that's
the
so next hard week. For the players. I don't think the players on the Patriots get enough credit for being
Absolutely.
Able to adjust
and Belichick
to
brought,
that.
And Belichick brought that up this week. Yeah. He was saying, look, what we ask our players to do is much more than just – do X, Y, and Z throughout the course of a year. We expect them, and this goes back to them scouting and doing their research, and both in college scouting and free agent scouting, they've got to know a player is going to come in here and want to be able to adapt what and be able to adapt their game to a particular game plan from week to week.
Yeah, Lawrence Guy said the other day, that's why we're here. We're the players that are here that are, make up the 53 of the Patriots are here because we're all versatile and we're all intelligent football players and we're all able to adapt week to week to the game plan, so it's not a lot harder for us to do that.
And it's not, and Adam, I'm curious to see what you think about this, but it's not just versatility in terms of, yeah, I have three or four different skills.
Right.
It's being able to mentally and intellectually right. adapt their play from week to week
yeah.
and be able to consume the game plan, digest it, and go out and execute it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's that's been the case. They look for smart players. I mean, that's part of their strategy when they scout the draft or when they look for free agents and stuff. They want guys who can handle the load in almost an academic sense and apply it to the field. So it allows them to do more from a playbook standpoint and from a game plan standpoint. When you have a bunch of players who can do a bunch of different things mentally, it allows you to attack almost any problem any way. So it allows the coaches to coach more. So I think I think that's been the case. It's a smart group of players, and they usually find a way to execute too. It's hard to find many games with this team where you see them just sort of not pick up what the Patriots coaches are trying to leave for them.
Yeah, it's pretty cool because I think we talk about it a lot when we see the teams play the Patriots. Like the Chargers coaching staff, for example, just got roasted for their game plan against the Patriots. But what the Chargers did was what they always do. You know, they just ran out their defense and their offense and they just played their game. And the coach's inability to adjust didn't do the players any favors with their inability to adjust. And that's what happens. And the Patriots have the coaching staff. This coaching staff, I was thinking about this last night. That 96 coaching staff with Parcells and Belichick
right.
and Al Groh and Scarnecchia, that one is always kind of lauded as probably the best coaching staff ever. There's like four or five Hall of Fame coaches on that staff. So it's pretty incredible. But this coaching staff, I think we're going to look back on it, 10 years from now and say, wow, they had Belichick, they had McDaniels, they had Flores, they had Scarnecchia, they had Ivan Fears. They had an absolutely loaded staff.
I'm glad you brought that up because my question to Bill yesterday
yeah.
was for all of the talk that goes into having a locker room that is got great chemistry and the players all get
yeah.
along. What about the coaches?
Yeah.
How do your coaches get along? And he said, well, nobody ever really asks about that, but it's a
yeah.
great question. It's a great point because this coaching staff, for the most part, is amenable to each other's ideas. There are, but he went out on to say there are times where, we have to talk somebody into something
yeah.
and they're not completely on board. And, we take, the Democratic vote and we say, well, look,
yeah.
Most of us think that this would work and this is the way we should use your personnel. And that's the way we do it. But for the most part, they're all in concert with each other. They all understand what the other is trying to accomplish.
Right.
And, I'm writing a column pregame for Super Bowl 53 about exactly that point.
Yeah.
How this particular coaching staff, we might look back and think it's one of the best that Bill's ever had.
I mean, O'Shea obviously is moving on to be the Patriots wide receiver
right.
coach. Chad O'Shea is moving on to be the offensive coordinator of the Miami Dolphins, it sounds like.
Which sounds like a big leap, but,
yeah.
Obviously, Brian Flores knows Chad
yeah,
O'Shea from
yeah,
working with him.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a long list of guys. Brandon Daly, Josh Boyer, obviously Steve Belichick, who I think, as much as you want to say coach's son, he has a future, at least as a coordinator, I think, in this league as well. So a lot of really smart coaches. All right, the last one here before we sign off. Other than Aaron Donald, I'm going to say other than Aaron Donald and Sue, because I think everyone knows that those two guys are big players on this Rams defense. Who scares you on the Rams on the defense side of the ball, Adam?
Well, there's two guys that I keep coming back to, and for one of them is Fowler. just because he's so, it seems like every game he makes at least one, you know, sort of game changing play. And he's just a dangerous guy. And I felt like that ever since he was at Jacksonville too. The other guy is, I feel as he's sort of a boom or bust player in this game, is Marcus Peters. I feel like he's a guy that the Patriots can take advantage of underneath, because, you know, he tends to play off coverage, and, you know, he sort of falls back and you can get stuff underneath on him a lot. But then every now and then he's just got that knack for, you know, making the big interception. So those two guys, I feel like, are guys who can make plays that can sort of turn the game on its head with either turnovers or sacks, interceptions, what have you.
Yeah, I agree with both of those. I think Fowler is the guy that I've just kept on circling all week, because, like you said, Adam, all it takes is one play, right? It's one big sack. It's one strip sack, like we saw in the Super Bowl last year with Brandon Graham. And it's just that one play that can turn the tide of the game, especially late in the game in the second half. We saw it in the Super Bowl against Atlanta with Dante Hightower's sack, you know. Those types of plays just make such a big impact. And Fowler is the type of guy that, okay, maybe the other 40 times, 30 times he rushes the passer, it's not really going to make a huge impact. But the one time that he gets home is the time where he forces Drew Brees to throw an interception, or he forces a strip sack, or he forces a fumble, or whatever the case may be. And he's just going to get a ton of one-on-ones with Marcus Cannon and Trent Brown, because they're going to have to double team and slide the protection inside to the big guys in the middle, that Fowler is just going to have his time on the outside to kind of be one-on-one. And I mean, look at Trent Brown has just done a fantastic job, and same with Marcus Cannon against guys like Dee Ford and Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram and Justin Houston in the playoffs. So it's not like they haven't had success against edge rushers these last couple of weeks, because they have, but he just seems like the type of guy that you're not going to hear his name for the entire game, and then the fourth quarter he's going to, you know, deliver that big sack.
Okay, I'm going to give you the one name that
I
think could have a big game. Mark Barron on Gronk.
Okay,
I mean, Gronk could eat him alive. Gronk could have, you know, seven catches, 105 yards, and two TDs. But I think Mark Barron is the kind of guy who could be that hybrid, physical enough, fast enough
to
keep up with him, to cover him, to actually physically cover him without having to pass him off to anybody. And I look for Mark Barron because I think the Patriots are going to try to get Gronk involved in this game early and often. And I think he is the kind of guy that could be disruptive. He could pick off a pass. And we all know, okay, that Tom, as great of a quarterback as he is, the best big game quarterback ever, also makes some mistakes in these big games.
Yeah.
We go back to the Chiefs game in the AFC Championship, the red zone
pick.
This is
hurting me as you're talking, but
Reggie Ragland at the Super Bowl red zone interception against the Seahawks in the first half. I think Ragland is capable. Mark Barron is capable of doing the same.
For all four quarters in a lot of these games, he's just perfect when it matters the most.
Absolutely.
And that kind of mitigates some of the mistakes.
Like three on third and 10 in overtime.
Right. Yeah.
So, but I'm going to go with Mark Barron because I think he's the kind of guy who's going to, I think the Patriots are going to, beyond Marcus Peters. I think he's somebody they're going to try to target on that Rams defense, and I'm curious to see how he responds.
Yeah, and Gronk, I think all week long, a lot of positivity coming out about Gronk. Gronk himself, Tom Brady's positivity about him. So that makes you kind of feel like maybe they go to him early and see is that.
Or maybe that's a complete decoy.
Right.
Who knows?
But maybe that's something that translates to, you know, all right, we think he's feeling good. We think that he's ready to have a big game. Let's try to feed the beast. And, you know, that could go one of two ways. It could be overkill, or it could work out for the Patriots. But I think the main thing is that in this matchup, in every Super Bowl, it seems like some of the players that don't get mentioned in the week, and as much as we talk about this game in the lead up, there's always one player that falls through the cracks that ends up being that guy that decides the game. You know, ends up having that big play. I would say last year it was probably Corey Clement catching balls out of the backfield for the Eagles that no one really talked about, you know, as a factor, and all of a sudden he had a big game. Now I feel like we almost go the other way, where we're trying to mention every single player on the roster. So it sounds like we've said
I will
everybody.
Say this, though, guys, Adam and Evan, How many times have we said in the last, I don't know, five or six or two or three years, five or six postseason games, where's Gronk in the first half?
Right.
Why are they not going to Gronk in the first half? And we're screaming from the press box.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll be saying that this Super Bowl.
I agree.
Can we get a Super Bowl where the Patriots actually score some points in the first quarter?
They did last year. They finally broke that scheme last year, though.
Or just maybe like play with a lead before.
Yeah,
their
that's
zeros
just not
on
their
the
way.
Yeah. I mean, like really, like you know,
if they want to make it
like in the Rams.
It's got to be fun to watch.
Four quarters.
So. It can't be.
A lot of Patriots fans, you know, as spoiled as this sound was, would absolutely love one Super Bowl where we can enjoy it and have it be a couple of TD blowout. You know, obviously in the Super Bowl, you don't usually get too many 30-point blowouts or anything like that. But you know, a nice comfortable win like we're used to seeing in all the other games that the Patriots play for the most part over the other 18, 19 years. All right, Trags, thanks so much for coming on. I'm glad we did this. You know, you come on my podcast, I come on
Home and Home.
Yeah, Home and Home, doubleheader. Whatever it may be. Adam and I will be back next week breaking down hopefully a Patriots win in the Super Bowl, maybe a Patriots loss in the Super Bowl, but we don't talk about that. And then I get to keep on teasing it just so that everybody knows that we will be covering the draft wall to wall starting
lots
right after.
Draft stuff.
Yes. So if you're looking for draft stuff, especially just draft stuff from a Patriots perspective, so we're not talking number one picks, we're not talking, you know, guys that are going to be going in the top five, we're talking just guys that might be there at 31, 32, and so on, and later in the draft that we can discuss and go on from there. Maybe Tyree Jackson, you know, maybe he is on the Patriots radar. You never know. So until then, signing off for Mike Petraglia, I'm Evan Lazar, and for Adam Kirchen as well. Thanks for listening.